So I have something with recommendations. If they don't engage or open an email within like 14 days, like I just kick them off because they're probably just going to not ever open anything.
Welcome to Talking Too Loud, the show that's serving up the loudest takes on building businesses, top-notch products, and unforgettable brands. I'm your host, Chris Savage, and I'm joined, as always, by my producer extraordinaire, Sylvie. Hey, Sylvie.
Hi, Christopher.
Oh, very formal.
So formal.
You good? You all right over there?
I'm just putting on my professional hat. You know?
Yeah, it's time to get professional up in here. We have a very professional episode. So today's episode is a takedown of newsletter myths, a blueprint for audience growth, and a love letter to reverse engineering your way to success. Each week, our guest dedicates approximately 20 to 25 hours researching a single creator, their growth tactics, really their strategies, and figuring out how did they grow their newsletter? How did they get big? She's part detective, part email doctor, and the founder of Growth in Reverse. Today, welcome Chanel Basilio. Chanel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We're excited.
I'm loving this setup.
Beautiful. Fantastic setup.
Yeah.
It took a minute to set up. It's a work in progress for sure.
You just did this just for now?
No. No, I've been working on it for a while. Long time.
Oh my gosh. I thought you set up just for this recording. I'm like, man, I'm not even in my home studio,
Savage,
my home office.
We're not that special.
I was shocked that I had heard that.
No, I mean, like, I had this set up and then I added these lights. And so it's just nice. Slowly
I'm digging
together.
It.
That's great.
I'm digging it.
That's awesome. Yeah.
$9 Christmas lights on Amazon. I'm into it.
That's the dream.
We'll link it in the show notes. You know it.
It'll be slightly more expensive soon with tariffs, but for now it's great.
Exactly.
So we like to start the show with talking about what has us talking too loud. And I want to ask Sylvie to get us started here. But Sylvie, what are you talking too loud today about?
So I've said in the past, sometimes I talk too loud when I'm excited about something. More often I talk too loud when I'm enraged about something. And the thing that I'm talking too loud about this week is that space mission. I'm like, what the bleep? What the F? Like, why? How did that?
Which part of it? Tell me what's like, why is it triggering?
So like the crew, like why Katy Perry? Like, why were you singing in space, girl? I don't know.
Did you think it's because she was famous?
Well, yeah.
I just assumed it was like a bunch of famous women are like on the thing together.
Yeah. And they're not taking up space. They're making space.
Oh, nice. Did you come up with that?
No, that's like their tagline. And it makes me just roll my eyes. It makes me want to gag.
I can't believe they said that.
I feel like, I don't know, that I can't even get the words out. I feel so mad about it. But it just felt like, what a waste. What did we learn from this? How did this help people down on Earth when there's so much that we could be doing? It was very expensive.
Yeah.
What
That's interesting because my take is different, which is I think the whole point of it was publicity. Seems like it's working because we're talking about it. And there's a lot. We don't know the benefits we're going to get from space, but we know they're trying to prove that it's safe enough that regular people – like Katy Perry, she's a regular person, obviously. Katy Perry, regular person.
So regular.
Can go to space. And there's like lots of wild ideas about stuff to do with space, like pumping greenhouse gases out of our atmosphere, obviously internet connectivity through space. So I just assumed it's a publicity stunt to like prove that this is more viable and safe.
Yeah, that's a far more generous review. Chanel, do you have any last
What's your take?
When Chris just said Frontier, I was thinking like the airline. I was like, was this a cheap space flight? I was like,
yeah.
How much does she have to pay to get up there?
Oh, this must have been sponsored. I think it's just pure publicity.
I'd rather see them prove some other things here down on Earth.
Yeah.
That's what I'd rather.
I know that is your opinion. You like Earth so much.
I am an Earth girl. I'm an Earth girl.
Chanel, anything that's got you talking too loud?
Cheese.
Really?
Oh, no, hell okay. Yeah.
So I went to this thing called Philly Cheese School. I live outside of Philadelphia. And this girl, she like set up shop and she hosts these classes. She tells you about these different types of cheeses and they do pairings. So this one was potato chips and cheese. Now,
and do you make the cheese or is it like, yeah, is it like teaching about cheese?
You don't. She just teaches you about it. Okay. Like, all of these things I had no idea about, but I get so excited when someone is so passionate about like their thing. Like yeah. It could be anything. And so like you could just see like the excitement in her eyes. So I just love stuff like that. But that's yeah, awesome. Cheese. Yeah.
Yeah. Cheese.
Cheese.
You know, I was in my 20s, I loved cheese so much. And my wife.
That's like a
Well, I'm gonna tell you why. My now wife, then girlfriend, and my brother had a surprise party for me. And it was a cheese party. So I came home and there was like just like tons of cheese. Great time. What I didn't understand is that at that moment in my life, I was allergic to cheese. And so it's not great. I now have overcome that allergy though, which is the point of this. So now I love cheese again. I'm back with you.
Wait, so did you just eat enough that you overcame
the
allergy?
You know what? I think I was kind of like microdosing butter for like over a decade. And I think what happened is the microbiome got back into shape and it's like, fine, now I'm totally fine.
Huh. Wow.
You too can overcome cheese allergies. That's what we're here to talk about. Okay. We could obviously probably actually go on for like an hour of this topic. I don't think that we should.
No.
Let's get into pressing matters. You have very more pressing matters.
Like space.
Like space. We're going to spend an hour on space now. So Chanel, you run Growth in Reverse. Mm-hmm. Take us back. Like, what is this? What are you doing over there?
Yeah. Getting nerdy about newsletters. So I spend a lot of time researching how people grow their email lists. And so I essentially write these long form articles. I'll spend like 20 to 30 hours of research and then figure out how they grew their email list to 50,000-ish subscribers. And then I'll kind of write this long form article with like charts and screenshots of like how they did it and how other people can kind of replicate that.
How do you figure that out?
The Wayback Machine, Twitter, LinkedIn, podcasts.
So you really, when you're saying like you research, like you'd find someone who has like a big audience, mm-hmm. Wayback Machine, go look at everything they shared on LinkedIn and literally reconstruct what worked.
Yeah.
And are the places that you're doing this, like are the lists like open? Can you tell how rapidly they're growing and stuff at different points?
A lot of creators talk about their stuff a lot. So they'll be like, hey, I just hit 40,000 subscribers or hey, I just hit 50,000. So I like catalog those dates and kind of create a timeline. Yeah.
When did you first start paying attention to newsletters? Yeah. Like what was that moment?
Yeah. It was, I think, December of 2022 is when I started the newsletter. And I had found this guy named Mario Gabrielli who writes The Generalist. It's a newsletter. It's like he's a VC guy. And so he was writing about tech and all that stuff. But he had written an article that said he had made $300,000 in his first year by himself writing a newsletter. And I was like,
you're like, BS.
What? Like, how did this guy do that? Yeah, exactly. So I had to figure out how he did it. And I probably spent like 50 to 60 hours on that one.
Wow.
And then I was like, wait a second, like somebody else might want to read this. And so I was like, maybe I'll send it out as a newsletter. I had created WordPress sites in the past, so I just hit it published on it.
Wow. Were you just so intrigued? Like, you're like, I can't believe that this person's making this much for a newsletter. I have to understand how it works. Like, is that what caused you to look into it?
Yeah, exactly. And I love researching stuff and like finding the behind the scenes kind of thing. So it just made sense.
What do you think now? I mean, obviously you've done this a lot. Yeah. And I know you've looked at like a lot of the powerhouses out there, like the Letty's podcast and his newsletter and Ben Tossel we've had on the show. And what are the patterns that you found doing this, like, that you would say, like, if someone's trying to grow a newsletter, this, you have to do this.
Yeah. So there's a lot of shiny ones, but I think the three that I come back to all the time are like build really good relationships, like have a community around you. Your content has to be amazing and focus, like just don't quit. Those are like the three basics. And then there's, of course, like a bunch of different growth strategies you can do, but I think those are the ones that get more easily overlooked. And so people skip those.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. So going in reverse, like don't quit. Big believer in that. I'm a big believer in not quitting. But also, I think like I've just learned that same lesson a lot. Like a lot of things, if you do them for 6 months or a year, it would be really easy to stop doing them. Sometimes 2 years, 3 years would be easy to stop doing them. And then there's a moment where it can flip and like actually things really take off. That one I understand. The one like making amazing content, How do you think people, how are they doing this? Do you think these people are just innately great writers? Do you think it's just they found the right topic, they're the right approach? Like, how do you make really amazing content?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to distill, I would say, but going back to like the cheese example, like that person, like she's so excited about cheese that I would read anything she wrote about cheese just because it's like the passion comes through. So I think there needs to be some of that. It doesn't have to be necessarily the topic, but maybe the format. So like, I love research. So I could, I don't know. I think it'd be fun to like find a cold case and like help someone solve one of those cold cases.
I'm with you. But
research, right? So it's still like, but I think there are a few different things. I actually gave a talk about this recently, but so I called it like five buckets of good content. So it's like helping someone either make money, save money, save them time, which is a big one, make them laugh, or teach them something, make them feel smart kind of thing. And if you can combine two of those or more, I think you're onto something. Mm. And then also like that passion piece has to kick in somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to be like, this is how you make great content because it's so, I don't know, it's such a giant topic, but I think those are a good starting point.
And it's just hard. I think if people have, it might be great for them, but is it great in the market is always probably a question.
Yeah. Is there an audience for it?
Totally.
Is there an audience for it or does it even stand out as great to the audience? Like versus like you might be the best you've ever done, but that's actually not yet good enough to break through.
Right. Yeah. And so I think there's a lot of experimentation with it too. Like sometimes you hit on something that just clicks right away and sometimes you don't. So it's hard to figure that out.
What are the signals, like if someone is just kind of like starting to write a newsletter, what are some signals when it's working? What are some signals when it isn't?
I would say people are replying without you asking them to and saying like, holy crap, this is awesome. Or they're sharing it with someone without you asking them to again. Like, sure, you want to ask people to share your stuff, but if you're seeing like multiple people just starting to like come to you and be like, hey, my friend told me about this thing. Like, I'm so excited to read it. That's a big sign, even in the beginning.
And that's where the community piece comes up.
Yeah. But also like, I know you had Jay Klaus on, like I'm in his community. And so it was helpful for me to kind of get to know Jay kind of through that community, but also other people in that community. And so I've made friends through there that I can now like bounce ideas off of or share different things with. So two different kinds of community, I think, but yeah.
How? Oh no, go for it.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, go.
Please. Oh, Sylvie, please.
Sorry.
And I get a snort on that.
Go on. What is the snort? Sometimes happens, and sometimes it doesn't.
We love it.
But
keep it going.
You bore witness. So you analyze creators, which is slightly different than say like a brand newsletter, right? Like it's creators, it's their personality.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's as effective for brands?
I do. I mean, I'm just thinking about like my own habits and like consumption habits and that kind of thing. Like I gravitate more towards the brands with like a personality or they're sharing a story or, you know, there's something more there than just being like, hey, we have a sale this week. Like, yes, the product's good, but if they also are building some kind of community or like an ethos around their brand, there's something to that. And I think through writing and like sending newsletters, you can even share YouTube videos and that kind of thing in your email. Like it doesn't have to be all written content. So I totally think there's an open space for that.
Do you think with all what now that you've like done all this research, you continue to do it, do you think you're better at spotting the ones that are going to take off?
Oh, that's a good question. I do. I think there is something to the good content thing. And I think over time I've been able to see like what makes good content. Like it's hard to put your finger on it, but you can kind of tell like, oh, this is like hitting a nerve with people. Yeah, I think so for sure.
So like you see somebody, they might have a small audience, but you come across the content, you're like, oh damn, if this person keeps doing this and they actually like engage with their community, this is going to go.
Yeah. Or like I'll see one and I'm like, oh man, I can see so many different avenues you could take to grow this thing, but it's hard not to like overwhelm them up front because they're like doing a good thing. I'm like, just keep going. I don't want to tell you what to do.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Just keep going.
It's also interesting because like, Sylvie, your question on newsletters, like, is it still a good time? Like, as you're saying that, I was thinking about like how long newsletters have been around, but also that they're really they're changing. Like, we still call them newsletters, but they're starting to change. And like, one of the ways it's like really interesting how they're changing is like, if you use Substack or you use like LinkedIn's newsletter, it's not necessarily sending you an email. Like, it's still a newsletter, but it's in an app. It's like an alert in an app that's like, hey, come read this thing.
Yeah. And I struggle with LinkedIn's newsletter being a newsletter because you don't actually get those email addresses. So to me, it's like not really one, but the product name is newsletter. Spicy. So I'm like, I don't know.
That's what's, so that is interesting because like what I found, because the LinkedIn algorithm is changing so much, that like the newsletter is helpful because it basically guarantees that the people who have followed you will see it. Whereas like if you
unless
post
you're like me and you turn off notifications via email.
Well, if you turn off notifications. But like if you subscribe to the newsletter, then you should get an alert at least if somewhere in your interface it's like this person posted. But if you follow the person, you won't see their content unless the algorithm decides that it's useful.
Yeah.
But I'm not getting the emails. So it's not like you're building on someone else's, it's like renting versus owning, right? Like you're building on someone else's platform and relying on the whims of that versus like your point, which I think is a very good one. So I've talked a lot about, like, if you get the email list, like then you can like move between platforms and keep the relationship with the customer.
Yeah. I think it's smart in a way to play the LinkedIn newsletter game if you're going hard on LinkedIn, because it's a no-brainer at this point. Like, I should probably be doing that. I just hesitate because it makes me, I don't know.
Uneasy.
I don't know, grumpy about it. But but I think it's smart in a way that, like, you can easily grow your audience there or have a better chance of them seeing your content, like you just said. So I think that's a smart way to go. But just know that, like, it's not really a newsletter. And if LinkedIn deletes your account tomorrow, like, you're going to have nothing.
Yeah, it's all gone.
Yeah.
Where do you think people should start today? Is there some platform they should pick? Is there some way that you think has found the right balance of like building the long-term value of having the direct relationship, but also enough tools and stuff that you could like grow the audience?
Yeah. I think there's two ways to go about this. Like, if you know 100% what you're going to write about and you know that there people are going to be interested in it, like just start a newsletter and start promoting it that way. But if you don't know, like, I almost think it might be wise to start on a platform like LinkedIn where you can grow an audience, like test out different types of content, figure out what you like writing about, and then start the newsletter. There's one guy I did a research on named Tom Alder. He actually started growing his LinkedIn account and he set up a wait list for his newsletter that wasn't even published yet. And he had 5,000 subscribers before he even launched. But he was writing on LinkedIn for like 9 months trying to figure out what to write about. And the topic he ended with was not the one he started with, but now he's like growing so much faster because he took that time to figure it out.
And then he took that and he put it into one of the other newsletter platforms that actually, because a lot of these platforms like Kit and Beehive and Substack all have like growth elements now too, right?
Yep.
And do you recommend those? Like, maybe even for people who don't know, could you tell people what that is?
Yeah. What are some of the growth elements?
Yeah. So a lot of them have what's called recommendations platform. So when someone subscribes to your newsletter, like a little box will pop up that says, hey, I also recommend you check out these three newsletters. And you can kind of like share your new audience with other creators. And so on their end, they'll also show up a box that shows your newsletter and you can get subscribers that way. I think it's a good way to grow. However, those people are not as high quality as the people that, you know, find you naturally through LinkedIn or something. So you have to have like systems on the back end to remove a lot of those people if they're not opening or engaging with your emails. So I have something with recommendations. If they don't engage or open an email within like 14 days, like I just kick them off because they're probably just going to not ever open anything.
And so what I think you're saying, and tell me if this is right, is that like what you really value is you build something that's really great quality content. You do it consistently, you build a community around it, and actually that community and the word of mouth around the content itself is what helps you like grow quickly.
Yeah, 100%. And so in the beginning,
so you don't like these other growth things because they're not pure and it's not as good.
It's not that I don't like them. I just think people rely too heavily on them.
Sure, that's a better way to put it. You like them fine.
They're okay.
LinkedIn isn't pure.
Okay, I want to go try something different. So we have someone on our team, Kara, who has a question for you.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm Kara and I work on the customer marketing team here at Wistia. We're currently rethinking our newsletter due to low engagement. Our biggest challenge is that we really want to share a lot of helpful content with our users, but the more links you include, the less likely people are to actually click on anything. So now we're testing a new approach with fewer links overall and just one big poll question per send to encourage clicks without overwhelming people. But here's my question. How do you share enough helpful info to users to keep them engaged without fully overwhelming them or tanking your click-through rate?
That's interesting. I think that's an... How do you share enough helpful info for users to keep them engaged? I mean, I think it depends on your audience. Like, I send out 3,000 to 5,000 word posts and people engage with that. So it's hard to say, like, that's a lot of content. And I think, like, what's the goal of the newsletter is the main question. Like, are you trying to just get people to click? Are you trying to inform them about updates with Wistia? Like, what's the goal would be my first question. But answering a question with a question is not always helpful.
No, but that's, I mean, I think that's helpful, right? Yeah. Like, and I think that I do think there's a bunch of goals, which maybe is part of the challenge, is that they're trying to accomplish a lot of things in one.
Oh, interesting. I wish I would have signed up for this so I could see some of the content and give you more like detailed feedback.
Well, we can definitely send you the newsletter.
I like the poll thing though. I think that's good. My friend Caitlin Burgoyne, who writes Why We Buy, she actually just started something called Fryay. It's like a different kind of newsletter. So she teaches buyer psychology. So she'll teach like one concept. And it's so meta because she'll like use it in the newsletter itself. But she started sending these ones on Fridays. And in that, she's like, okay, remember last week's issue? Like, what was the answer? And she'll have like three things. And if you guess it right, you get like a free course or discount or something. So it's like That's very cool. engaging. She just launched it though. I'm not sure how it's going, but I think it's going to do well.
You think it's the one you would pick to take off?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Is it, do you feel like subject lines and sender names, how important are those things?
So I struggle with this because I hear a lot of people saying they have good success with testing subject lines, and I don't. And I'm wondering if it's because like people look for my content, so they look for my name regardless of what the subject line says. And I hate saying that out loud because it makes me sound like, I don't know, weird.
Sounds like you think you're pretty great.
Yeah, right? but I do know some people who have like really good success with testing subject lines. So I don't know. It's like if someone's looking for you specifically, they might not mind it and they'll just open anything. But yeah, I don't think it's a waste of time necessarily, but I don't know that it's like the best use of your time if you have other things you could be doing.
You're saying just everything about quality. Like, make it so good that people talk about it. Make it so good that the brand value is so high that someone sees your name and they always look.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's worked for me. And I've seen it work for other people. And so I just always gravitate towards that.
Are there any newsletters that people should be reading to get better at newsletters? Growth in reverse, obviously.
Well, sure.
No big deal.
No big deal. I think I'm a big fan of reading newsletters outside of the marketing space just to kind of see like what people are doing. Cause I often find that like, I don't know, mommy bloggers will hit on something that like the typical marketer isn't thinking about, but they make a killing. Like, look at any mommy blogger, at least in the last couple of years, and they're making so much money. And you're like, really? From like a $9 thing? Okay. So they have different ways about doing things. You can also read like Matt McGarry runs the Newsletter Operator. That's a good one. Brad Wolverton, he used to work for The Hustle. And he has a good newsletter called Marketing Examples. No, sorry, Newsletter Examples. But Harry Dry, who does run Marketing Examples, is also a good one. But those are kind of the three or four that I would read.
That's cool. I also, I try to look outside of marketing for inspiration on content. And I found myself like, it's all like comedy.
Nice.
Because there's these people who have like these unbelievably huge, like I cannot get over how big and engaged their audiences are. But the production of what they do is like super high end. And they somehow have like very high lasts per minute, even though it seems like it's like almost always unplanned. And I find that like very interesting. Like how you actually grow that audience, like what they're doing to engage folks.
Yeah.
And at least the lesson for me is just really similar to what you're talking about, which is like, make the quality for whatever someone's looking for. Like in that case, they're trying to laugh. But if you're trying to learn or you're trying to differentiate, like go so far in that, so far up the quality scale that now it actually does generate word of mouth and people talk about it. And it gets
comedians are interesting though. Like Kevin Hart, he started out just like going around and he would play shows to like 5-10 people and he'd put like little note cards on their table and say like, Kevin Hart wants to get in touch with you or something. And people would leave their email, their name, and then he would be able to call those people or email them every time he would go into that town. And then he had this huge email list, but it's like note cards. Like no one does that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. It's like something that other people aren't doing, right? It's just like an open space to compete in.
Yeah.
Like you're literally there in person. No one else is putting stuff on the tables and you do it, it's going to stand out. Mm-hmm.
I think also people have this expectation today that like success is going to happen overnight. You're going to find the topic and the audience and the resonance overnight. And it's, I mean, that's what we see right on Instagram or that's how it's presented to us. But it's so much more grassroots. And it's so much more experimentation. So like, have you talked to newsletter creators who are kind of in this phase where they're a little bit lost? Like, how do they get out of that? Can they reinvent? Can they double down? Like, what have you seen?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think I hate to say this, but it depends on like the situation. But I would agree with you that people want to grow so fast that I don't know. I feel like almost the ones that do grow super fast, like they end up not being around for the long run. So like you think it's a great thing, but it's actually not. But then there's
They flame out. It's like the fire comes quickly and then it's gone versus like the slow fire burns the hottest. Like it takes longer to get there, but once it's there, it stays on.
Yeah. Like I really wish I had. So Beehive in the beginning, like 2021, 2022, they had a ton of AI newsletters popping up, like after ChatGPT came out. I would love to have the data of like how many that started and how many are still around. Cause that one is just like everyone was creating an AI newsletter.
It is also like the compounding effect, right? Like the overnight success thing is you look at like Lenny and his podcast and he shares the graph, right, of growth, and it's utterly insane now. It's like, what does he have, a million subscribers? It's like looking like straight up. Mm-hmm. But like to your point, like if those people are getting an amazing product and they're some percentage of them is telling other folks every time, forwarding the emails, like making decisions based off of that, that compounds in the sense it could be a pretty small percentage, but the audience now is so big that the growth is actually the percentage can be the same, but the absolute growth can be large. And it might even be the same as it was like 5 years ago, four years ago. It's just hard to imagine when you're starting and like, you know, it's a little trickle up that that's a good thing, but it actually might be. It might be exactly what you need. It's just like, takes years.
Yeah. People also like to forget how much experience Lenny has with like the subject matter he talks about.
Totally.
So like his content is just so freaking good. Like you can't find another piece like that. And he even says like the biggest growth lever he has is just spending more time on each piece, like make it better. People want to share it. And he has a ton of connections. He has a great community. He reaches out to people who are working in the product space at these companies and he gets like first party data. So it's just, he goes above and beyond. And like, I think people just look at Lenny and they're like, oh, he had a million subscribers. I could never do that. But there's something to that. There's a reason he did.
How often do you think, creators should be like surveying their audience? Like, is that super important in the beginning?
Serving their audience by like, you mean taking their advice and like changing the content?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's hard. I think there are some people who shouldn't do that at all. Like they're already on the right path. Like don't, as much as it sounds horrible, like don't listen to your audience. They're there for a reason. Like they're going to ask you to make changes that are going to like detrimentally affect your content. But I mean, if you hear like something from a ton of people, maybe there's something to that that you should change or take advice from, but I don't know. And there's always room for like pivoting too. Like I think in the beginning, Lenny was just answering questions and now he does like these other pieces that aren't just like a Q&A. So you can pivot your content as well, especially if you get bored or you feel like you've talked about something too much, like follow your excitement and your passion. I think that's really going to carry through in the content.
I like that advice.
Yeah, I think it's a great takeaway for anyone who's trying to do this, is just like find the things you're actually passionate about and good at, and then put a lot of effort into it. Because like, it's just very hard to fake it. Like if you think, I feel like sometimes people can like over-rationalize things. They do a bunch of research. Oh, this looks like a segment that there isn't like a great audience that's being built yet. I should go in that segment, and because there's just like open space, and you go into it and then it's like, you have nothing to say, nothing to do, nothing unique to add, versus like, yeah, you might be in a space that seems kind of crowded, but if you find the right angle within that space, the crowdedness might just represent the interest. And so it really is about matching back to like you and your expertise and what you actually care about. Because we can smell. We can tell when someone doesn't actually care.
We can smell it.
We can smell it.
Smell it through the screen.
Truly.
Right through the screen.
No, it's so true though. I think people, it's the one piece of advice people hate hearing, because it's like, oh, I don't know what I'm passionate about. I don't know what I like doing. And it's like, cool, pick a topic you think is interesting and like start writing. And if you don't like it, then do something different or change up the format, or I don't know, do something completely different. But it's just, I don't know, it's just such an overarching theme I keep seeing. Like if you're not into it, like people are going to know and you're going to get bored.
Yeah. No one else is going to be into it if you're not into it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a key piece of it.
Love that.
When you're writing Growth in Reverse, do you have like times when you're just like, oh my God, this newsletter is like pulling teeth. Like I don't have it today. And like, how do you kind of like psych yourself up? So, 'cause honestly, sometimes when we're recording, I'm like, is this working? Like, you know, like you kind of get in your head and you're just, yeah, you're trying to like assess both like, how does it feel? And like, how is it going to land?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I've had weeks. So the format is I'll pick something usually on like a Monday or Tuesday, which is way too late to start already because I send on Sundays. And so I pick a topic, a newsletter. I have this long list and I'm like, all right, what's exciting to me right now? And I'll like start doing research. And sometimes by Wednesday, Thursday, I'm like, I'm bored. So then I stop and then I start again. And it's like not a great process, but if I were to just like force it, it doesn't, I don't know, I don't enjoy it. And then I end up not doing it. So there are lots of started deep dives that I have not published. Sometimes you just have to like scrap it and start over, pick something new. There are some that I've come back to and like I'm more excited that week about it, but some of them I just never hit publish on.
Yeah, I think the like stopping and starting over is like not my instinct at all. And I suffer because of it. I suffer.
Sometimes
so
we all suffer because of it.
No, like I'm thinking about when for our 100th episode.
That's what I'm thinking about too.
I knew you were thinking about this. For our 100th episode, it was like 100 degree weather, 100 rapid Literally. Fire questions. Like that was kind of the framing. Okay. And each sort of we went on different tour stops around Cambridge that I had picked. And one of them was this duck boat tour. Horrible. Do not recommend.
It was 100 degrees, no AC. It's like this open thing.
Oh boy.
And Sylvie just like chose stuck a duck traffic. Tour that was like in the dead center of the city as opposed to the ones that like start by the water. So basically we get on the bus and just start. Even before we got on the bus, we're like waiting. We're like, Sylvie, this is so hot. This is but like, this is devastating. Like we're going to look just like soaking wet. And she's like, we got to do this.
And I have so many regrets about that day, that moment. But like
is there footage of this somewhere?
Yes.
Yeah.
We will.
Swipe to it.
Yeah. The duck boat, go. That idea just felt so intimidating in the moment. So I'm like, is there a mantra? Is there something I could have repeated to myself then? Or is there like just a little nugget of wisdom that I can just apply and other people can apply in the future where they're like going down this, they've gone down this dive. It's not really working. You kind of know, like time to pump the brakes, start something new.
I think, honestly, for you, just think of the duck boat. Like, is this another duck boat?
I love that. Is this another duck boat? Yeah.
And like, if you had that inkling, it probably is. Like,
yeah.
If you're even feeling that a little bit, like, it's probably just time to start over and cut your losses. And there have been weeks where I just like republish an old article because I didn't finish. I try not to do that, but it happens. So yeah. Sometimes I'd rather just like republish something I know is good than put out something that's like meh.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not easy though.
It's not. It's really not.
Just think of the duck boat.
That's good advice. So always think of the duck boat, Sylvie.
Oh, God, in my nightmares.
All right, Chanel, I want to get into our rapid fire segment. Okay.
Okay.
So, bunch of short questions, short answers, all around newsletters. Sound good?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, great. Emojis and subject lines, secret weapon or rookie mistake?
Secret weapon.
Okay.
I like
better
it.
Metric, open rate or click rates or something else?
Reply rate.
Yeah.
Boom.
We like that.
Boom goes the dynamite.
If you could ban one newsletter trope forever, what would it be?
Bigger is better. Like more subscribers is better, I guess.
More repeat subscribers.
Yeah, I just think people put too much emphasis on like the size of their audience or the size of their newsletter when it really doesn't matter.
Versus like how many people are actually engaging and care and like reply.
Yeah, or like
the community part.
I mean, I know people have 600 people on their subscriber or on their email list and they're making like $500,000 a year, or people that have like 50,000 and making like, I don't know, 100K.
Yeah.
So it doesn't correlate to happiness or success.
Do you think the best newsletters are built more on intuition or analytics?
Ooh, that's hard. I would say a combo, probably more intuition though.
When you're writing your newsletter, is there music playing in the background or total silence?
There's something playing, whether it's music or a podcast or something.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been a blast.
Yeah.
This has been really fun. This is very cool. Where can people connect with you if they want to dig into your work or subscribe or join a community?
Yeah. Growthinreverse.com is the best place to go. I'm on LinkedIn as well. Just Chanel Basilio. So it's probably the best place.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We got passionate about newsletters today.
We sure did. I want to write one. I feel inspired.
I think you should. Just make sure it's about something you actually care about.
Rom-coms.
And you're willing to stick with it.
Mysteries.
I thought you were going to say women in space.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
No, but seriously, that was a great episode. And it was really fun to chat with her. I feel like it's always cool to see somebody when they figured out what their craft is. And now they're like really growing it and scaling it. And so, yeah, she has a good understanding of why it's working, about why her newsletter is growing, how other newsletters are growing, a way of articulating it that I thought was like really lovely and helpful. And yeah, there's like lots of good insights in there that I think could be applied to newsletters, but also really to any medium.
Yeah. Make sticky content.
Yes.
It's so hard, but when you make it.
Yeah, it is hard. And I think it's getting more important for the quality to be higher. You know, that's an interesting thing to think about. Like, how do you make sure that the quality keeps getting higher? In a world where there's so much competition.
Food for thought.
No, it's very cool.
We will definitely link to Growth in Reverse in the show notes.
Of course. Yes, of course.
And, you know, we tried out a new segment with a question. So listeners, viewers, if you have a question about newsletters or about building audiences, or about product adoption, we want to hear it. Send us an email.
We actually do.
We really do.
Yeah. Sylvie's serious. Email us at ttlpod@wisty.com.
I didn't mean to laugh. I'm deadly. Serious. I know. I was like, deathly or deadly? Deadly.
Okay. Don't forget, please rate and review the show wherever you consume it. That is super helpful to us. If you have other guests you think we should have on the show, we always love hearing about those folks. We've met lots of cool people that way. And until next time, keep on talking too loud.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia,
hosted by Chris Savage, produced by me, Sylvie Lubow, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham of Edit Audio. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.